This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.
Colorado Inn and KFKA present Rams Weekly. Brought to you by Marinda Simpson State Farm Insurance. Here's Brady Hull and Kevin Lytle.
Welcome in to the first edition of Rams Weekly with the Kevin Lytle. I am Brady Hull. Rams Weekly brought to you by State Farm Insurance agent Marinda Simpson, CSU alum, CSU diehard fan. Give her a call if you have insurance needs or questions. 970-223-7800. Kevin, we were just talking about this. I didn't believe this, but it's the first time you've been in studio since you became a married man.
Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a little bit, because we were doing Rams Weekly a little bit in the spring, and then once we hit July, it was kind of a break, because you got married in mid-July.
And I was gone, not working a lot.
Yeah, you kind of shut off for a while. You didn't go to Mountain West Media Days for the first time ever.
Yeah, first time I missed that in a while. So that was a little strange. I mean, to be fair, Vegas in July isn't like high on my to-do list. Obviously, the work part of it's fine and good, but I wasn't sad to not go to Vegas in July.
It would have been your last Mountain West Media,
which is crazy.
I mean, this is the last year for the Mountain West Conference, and I don't know, Kevin. Maybe I'm building this up too much. I just feel like every game means a little bit more. I'm watching the Fresno State Kansas game, and every game I'm looking at it going, every game is just another little test if you can really start to establish yourself. And I know there's a lot more to it than just the wins, but certainly
no, there is a little bit to it. I mean, especially when you throw in the lawsuits and everything, media rights deals, like you are fighting. It's hard to put a finger on the value of it, but the Pac-12, well, both sides really are working PR. You know, the PAC would never obviously publicly admit this, but the new PAC would absolutely love if the 2025 Mountain West football title game was two teams are leaving for the PAC. Mm. And conversely, the Mountain West would hate that. They wouldn't say that publicly. Mountain West would absolutely love if it's Air Force UNLV, the two programs that they are kind of making their flagships. Again, they can't say that. They won't say that. But you know darn well that is very true. The Mountain West would be overjoyed if it's UNLV Air Force.
Well, yeah, you got all these open lawsuits.
Or even Wyoming or whoever. Yeah, you know, the lawsuits, the, like I say, they're in some ways fighting for media rights money. And like I say, just PR, like, do the tweets matter? No, in a way, but yes, in a way. I mean, perception does matter.
Yeah, it is interesting. You know, this is just such a big transition. And even with CSU basketball winning the Mountain West Conference tournament last year.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into that talk come the winter, but the same thing's going to apply. The PAC is going to want future PAC teams to win the Mountain West men's and women's basketball titles. And conversely, a Mountain West would probably love if Grand Canyon won them because of the drama surrounding that edition.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's crazy, too. And that one, I see both sides, honestly. Like, if you're the Mountain West, you're like, we got to take care of ourselves now. And if that's sticking it to the teams, whatever. But for the leaving teams to be upset by that, because it's like you're still part of the conference, and to not really be a part of that vote was interesting.
Yeah. Well, and it's having on-court impacts, if you will. I mean, it messed up. I know for certain that messed up some scheduling that Mountain West, you know, current teams had, because they planned, you know, whatever this, and then that addition is going to lead to a change in the schedule, blah, 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 blah. It's all complicated, but it's having sort of the boardroom fighting is having an impact in some ways on the field, court, whatever.
It's when you go to Canvas Stadium or pretty much any sports building at Colorado State, you see the path to the Pac-12 all over.
So I'm curious. So I don't know if you've seen, but Texas State put up like big banners of we're heading to the Pac-12, you know, like Pac-12 logos and stuff like that, even though obviously they're a year out. Now, I think it's a little different. They're in, no offense, but a smaller conference. I don't think there's bad blood with them leaving that conference where the Mountain West teams there is. I've mildly joked or flowed the theory or whatever you want to call it of, you know, what if CSU hosts the Mountain West title game? You know, would they ever be so bold as to ring Canvas Stadium and Pac-12 flags maybe for the Mountain West style game? I don't think they would. I think that maybe be a step too far of knifing in the back. But there's a lot on the table now.
Yeah, it's huge, and you want to every opportunity you get to promote that is a big deal, you know. And going forward, obviously the season is that's a different conversation. But being anytime you get a lot of eyeballs on your program, being able to promote that's absolutely huge.
Yeah, and obviously the teams, you know, Jay Norvell and his staff are using that in recruiting. He's talked about it. Of you know, yeah, we've gotten excitement from prospects and whatnot, which of course is what they're going to say. I don't know how real or not real it is. I've talked to a lot, not a lot, but probably a third of CSU's 2026 recruiting football class, which those are guys that are seniors in high school right now, is a mixed bag. Some of them said, yeah, like that's going to be really exciting to be part of the first team in the Pac-12. Others have said, no, it's like I just like the coaches and it's the best fit for me. And, you know, the Pac-12 thing, yeah, sure, it's cool, but it didn't matter. So, I mean, that's all a mixed bag, too.
Kevin, if these teams were leaving for the Big Ten or even the ACC, would the Mountain West be freaking
out? No, I think if it were, again, now we're getting into the What's a Power conference.
Yep.
But if it were one of the current Power Fours that these teams are leaving, no, the vibe would be way different. And you've seen that when other teams have done that. Like, yeah, let's say the Big 12 came for CSU a year ago. There'd be no bad blood.
Yeah.
It would be, hey, thank you for everything you've done. Appreciate it. Best of luck. The Mountain West literally baked that into their new deal with UNLV. UNLV doesn't have to pay an exit fee if one of the Power Fours comes for them. They seem to think that's happening. I don't imagine. I don't see why that would be, but who knows? So, no, it would be different if, yeah, it was the Big 12 instead of a rebuild of the Pac-12.
Yeah. Now it's
also, or even if it was the Pac-12 5 years ago.
How do you feel in 5 years the Pac-12 will be classified? Is it just going to be known as like a tweener, like in between the two, Power Five?
I think it's going to be the best of the non-Power Fours. I think it's going to be pretty far above them, but designated below the others. I also think it's very possible that in 5 to 8 years, we're getting the big breakaway.
I do, too.
I mean, I think we're getting really deep into this, but I think the move right now is a short-term move for these programs of try and be as good as you can be in these next 5, 6 years in the pack to either, A, make sure to launch yourself when the powers consolidate into two mega conferences and see if you can get invited to that or whatever it is, two mega conferences, four, whatever, or succeed really well so that the pack can basically get back in that party. I don't necessarily think that it's all about this pack, you know, for the next 100 years.
Yeah. Well, and that's what, like, all the games are great, and this is why I think all these games mean something. Like, if CSU goes and beats Washington, suddenly they're not ranked because Washington's not ranked, okay, but that's still a big win.
Huge.
And then they start, they dominate their conference, whatever, and you get ranked, and then for the next couple of years, CSU can always say, hey, we were a top 25 team for 4 years in a row. When that big breakaway comes, you might look and go, well, they were ranked. Suddenly that stadium is never empty. They're selling it out like crazy. They're getting a lot more eyeballs on their football games. Suddenly they make the cut if we do this great.
All of it's interconnected. You know, the one thing Joe Parker frequently said that he's right about is we need people to engage. The more eyeballs on CSU, if CSU is always – so basically Boise State TV ratings are almost always top in the Mountain West. If CSU becomes that team that always has the top TV ratings, the conferences notice that. That – type of stuff is important. Now, of course, how do you do that? You win a bunch of games. Boise State didn't become that because they won one random game once. It's because year after year, they were quite good. They did have some obviously huge, 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 huge wins. But it's consistency of building for a long time. And that's what CSU needs.
Yeah.
Well, again, I'm not saying they have to go win the Fiesta Bowl this year. I mean, that'd be a nice thing to do. But if you keep stacking 8 to 11 win seasons, all of a sudden you just get more and more attention, sending guys to the NFL, things like that.
If Colorado State is consistently, like, let's just say they're Boise State. If CSU has Boise State's resume, aren't they aren't they even getting looks at other conferences outside of the Pac-12, beyond the Pac-12?
Yeah, I think CSU in some ways, obviously on the field hasn't been the case, but off the field has more to offer. You just have a bigger populace area, probably bigger growth potential because obviously Colorado continues to boom. You have some, obviously as a school, it's an elite institution academically, which no is, you know, that becomes less and less significant every year, but it still matters some, especially at different conferences. So yeah, if CSU were to match what Boise State has done on the field, the doors would open.
Do you think they'll be able to, one of the big knocks for CSU has been fans come to the games, a lot of times they leave the games early, and those are bad looks in the fourth quarter.
I think that's a bit of a myth these days.
Is it really?
I think
it
that's
didn't seem like that as much last year.
I think that's dissipated over the last couple of years. I mean, yeah, everyone left it during the Steve Addazio era. You know, if I wasn't getting paid, I would have left. Those were terrible to watch.
Yeah, you were ready to leave as soon as he started.
Those were terrible to watch. But I think that is more myth than reality anymore. Yes, you have some people leave. That's happening across the country, too. I mean, I forget what it was. I saw something about a fairly big-name school is looking at reducing capacity at their stadium right now because of basically the same idea of trying to make sure they get everyone in or, you know, enough people in. So, yeah, everyone is fighting the attendance fight right now just because there's so many other options. You know, football is great on TV these days.
Yep.
So it's you have to make it an event to go to. But no, I think CSU's crowd and stuff is now an asset rather than a hindrance.
I was talking to Brohard the other day, Kevin, about the freshmen. Like, this is a record amount.
It's the largest freshman class in CSU history. So at a time where some schools are struggling enrollment-wise, CSU keeps booming. I believe they're again going to be above Colorado. And even, you know, tangentially, I've heard some stories of just through high schools, CSU's just viewed differently than in the past, you know, just more energy around it. So yeah, the signs for CSU are good.
Is that all John Weber?
No. And I don't mean that as a knock on John.
Like, what has been
there?
The change?
There have to be a lot of different.
I guess basketball's been really good.
There have to be a lot of different factors, you know. And obviously, not every kid coming to school cares about the athletics at all either. Like I say, that's why I say CSU, if they have the on field product, can boom because the other stuff. You know, it's a really good school. A lot of people clearly want to go to CSU as an academic institution. You know, sports-wise, yes, football has improved. The in-stadium product at CSU has improved. Basketball, men's basketball has been really good. Volleyball is a fun thing to do. They're in a pretty healthy spot. They still need to grow, especially football-wise. But yeah, I think all that helps in these attendance things. I mean, obviously, CSU's on the road this weekend, but Ag Day, September 6th, the home opener against Northern Colorado, it's going to be a sellout,
wow.
Probably above capacity, I've heard.
Oh, Bears driving all that, right?
Something like that, yeah. I've been told already 9,000 student tickets out. Generally, that cap is like 10,500. They're going to go over it. I had someone tell me there may be, wow, 12,000 students at that game. So it's going to be a beyond capacity crowd for, I don't mean this as offense to UNC, but not the biggest opponent in the world.
Right.
Now, Grant is a local
it's
team,
local,
and obviously UNC is bringing people over, but it's not the biggest game CSU will ever play, and they're going to put 37 or whatever thousand in that stadium.
I was shocked to see that stat or that number.
And that's
that you
10
put out.
You know, I tweeted that Wednesday. That's what, 10, 11 days out before kick?
How much does the ticket sales change? Like, if CSU beats Washington,
that's
it skyrocket?
Great. Yeah, I've wondered that. You know, again, I don't anticipate them winning that game. But yeah, demand goes up for sure. That's what winning does.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, look what basketball did.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you look at, you know, the last couple of years when they'd win a few big non-conference games or when expectations were really high. The student crowds are huge. Demand for tickets is higher. Like, it's just what winning does.
Yeah. Coming up, Kevin, let's break into this game. How can CSU beat Washington? Certainly a different feel than where we were this time last year as they were preparing for Texas or preparing to get done with the game. We'll get to that coming up next. Looking at some of the big storylines surrounding this roster, a completely different defense, defensive coordinator. Tight end position seems really deep, too. So we'll talk about that with Kevin coming up next. It's Rams Weekly. And if you guys want to text us, if you have questions for Kevin or questions for me about anything, about life, to be honest, you can text us at the text line 888-530-0043. Rams Weekly continues. We'll be right back. Minutes after 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon, August 28th, 2 days away from the Colorado State Rams' first game of the season. My guy Kevin Lytle, you're gonna be heading out pretty soon.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah, Friday afternoon. I was thinking about, obviously not actually connected at all, but last work trip was to Seattle in March for the NCAA tournament.
Wow. Yeah, that's interesting.
Next work trip. In Seattle.
So you know your way around.
Yeah.
Do you like Seattle?
Oh, yeah. Big fan. It was great. I was out there for like 5 days for the NCAA tournament and got to do a lot of exploring. Been out there a few times. Yeah. I enjoy Seattle.
I'm a big fan of that kind of weather. It's felt like Seattle.
Yeah,
it has. Honestly.
It has.
That's my kind of stuff. I could be in the rainy stuff all day, every day. Kevin, we know it's a big matchup for sure. We talked a little bit about the line 20-21. For Colorado State and Washington, Rams being a dog, of course, in this one. Is it out of the realm of possibility? Like last year against Texas, it felt like it was out of the realm of possibility. Could they win? Could they beat Washington?
I think it is possible, yes. Because you look at it, you got a really exciting quarterback for Washington, Damon Williams, but he's only started, I believe, 2 games, so young, you know, pretty inexperienced. You have a team that, they were 6-6 last year, 6-7 after a bowl, maybe, I think it was.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, not great. Obviously, you know, they play a pretty tough schedule, but still not great. Second-year coach, they have a new defensive coordinator, so change on defensive style there, which obviously CSU has as well. Technically, they have a new offensive coordinator, but like CSU, their head coach is the play caller, so that doesn't matter as much. It's... Not saying it's easy, it's a small chance, but this is actually a winnable game. Whereas last year, CSU at Texas, basically not winnable. You go back to Norvell's first game in charge, CSU at Michigan, again, another national championship contender, not a winnable game, especially with where CSU was at that point. This is a game CSU can compete in. It's not insane to see a path toward competing here.
CSU, let's say they do win. I mean, you're probably heating up. You're probably getting that contract ready to go for the contract
extension. That'd be massive. Huge. Because, I mean, that would open the door, you know, one game at a time, all that. That would open the door to a 4-0 non-conference. Because
yeah,
CSU, again, no offense UNC, has to win that game. UTSA is a huge swing game. I know it's not the biggest name, but CSU fans need to be ready for that one. That's going to be very tough. Washington State has been absolutely gutted. CSU should be favored in that game. So all of a sudden, if CSU were to win Seattle, I mean, the door is open to a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this a lot. Last year, we said it a lot. Jay Norvell was on the hot seat, and you know he did enough to keep his job. Yeah. But still not enough to not be on the hot seat again this year. Although, depending on who you ask, it doesn't always feel like he's on the hot seat.
Yeah, I mean, it's somewhat the nature of college football, especially when you're changing conferences. A lot of people at CSU have said, you know, kind of used some variation of the phrase, you know, last year needs to be the floor. Expectations are rising. But, you know, Jay Norvell also... If you look, like, let's say when Jay was hired, you know, go back then, tell fans he's going to go from 3 wins to 5 wins to 8 wins. I think most people would say, all right, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's still some frustration because I don't think everyone loved the style of play last year. And obviously the lack of, you know, the CU games the last 2 years, obviously, between 2 years ago should have won. Last year, a fairly meager showing. Those stick in the craw a little bit. But Jay did then get 2 rivalry wins. So I think he's in a decent spot. There's pressure. every time he's asked about it, he basically shrugs off. He says, it's college football. If you don't win, you're going to get fired. So there's pressure every year. I think he still has that mentality.
Yeah, well, it's a big game, big season coming up, of course. But when you look at this roster for CSU, Kevin, obviously, in the last couple of years, we talked a lot about Torrey Horton and how good he was. Well, you had your best year with Torrey Horton on your roster, and he barely played.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, it all kind of started at San Jose State. Horton goes out in that game.
Yeah.
From that point on, they only lost one Mountain West game. So that's a big one to replace, but at the same time, the way they were running the ball, they were able to find ways to win without him. So it maybe doesn't feel like it's as big of a – with no disrespect for Torrey.
No,
we know how
course.
Good he is. But they were winning a lot of games without him.
Yeah, they had to learn how to play without him most of last year. And again, like, I get a lot of fans didn't like the style of last year, but – I give credit to Jay Norvell for being willing to alter and change to do what they needed to do to win, because I think if you'd tried to air raid with a bunch of young receivers that were, you know, maybe a little lost, it could have gotten ugly. And again, there are differing opinions on the defense. I think the defense wasn't very good, and if they had been more exposed, it could have gotten ugly. They win 1-8 games. The schedule, yes, was weaker. There's no doubt about that. They got fortunate to not have to play Boise State or UNLV. But again, CSU teams historically don't win 8 games very often, so you can't just discard. I've said that often of, yes, I think they need to improve, they need to do more, show more, but you also can't just dismiss those 8 games as insignificant, because it is significant for CSU.
Yeah, you still won the games,
yeah.
and you can't apologize for winning. It's even with teams on bad years. I look at Wyoming, and people look at that and say, yeah, Wyoming had a bad year. They only lost to Boise State by 4 points last year. So
college football's weird.
College football's weird, and rivalry games are even weirder. You know, you throw the records out and all that stuff too. So being able to win that game and then to beat Air Force, those are big things. But the reality is, as we've talked about, the schedule was what it was. So even though 8 wins, if Boise State and UNLV's on that schedule last year with 8 wins, then I think it's a different story.
Yeah, totally.
Because obviously you beat one of them.
Totally. If there were a win over UNLV, or especially over Boise State, it would be a very different feel.
On the receiving side, on the receiver side for CSU, how do you see that playing out? You know, I've seen a lot from you. I'm talking about Jordan Ross, Armani Winfield, Tommy Maher.
Yeah,
I hear his name a lot coming out of Jay Norvell.
Yeah, I mean,
mouth.
I think Tommy is basically your quote unquote number two. I think Jordan Ross, your number one. Both of them are due breakout seasons. I mean, Tommy has pretty quickly accelerated from like a no name to a fun walk on story to a very important part of this team. And then behind those two, you have kind of a group of guys that are, you know, waiting to earn their time, prove it. Armani Winfield did some good things last year, but was probably inconsistent. Petey Tucker has some talent potential. I think Tay Lanier is going to be the third starter, if you will. He's made some really big plays in camp. Again, it's going to be about consistency. Obviously, Kojo Antwi, I think further down the road, will be one to watch. I know he is listed technically on CSU's too deep. I don't necessarily expect him to play at Washington, but he's one down the road to watch for. Levon Brown, I think they have some talent. The yards and receptions should just be spread out rather than heavily concentrated on one guy.
I want to talk about the tight ends too.
Yeah.
We got a text from the 303. Kevin, can you give Brady a shot caller for every time he uses the phrase hot seat as it relates to Jay Norvell? It is what it is. He's been on the hot seat for 2 years.
Yeah, again, that's college football right now. It's just a lot of pressure.
But we can't, like, deny that he's on it, right? He's on it.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just had to get that out there. Text line is 888-530-0043. I know I have some listeners, too, that are, like, anti-Jay Norvell. Then there's other ones that are like, I could make a case no matter what he does this year.
Yeah.
They should bring
As always, there's a mix. And in our social media world, I think the negative ones tend to be louder than the positive ones. I think, you know, that seems like a reality, because I would say the interactions I get asking about Norvell on social media are pretty significantly different than in-person conversations about him.
Listen, I'm rooting for the guy. I like him. I think he's a good coach. But it just, you know, you are in a position where, a situation where you have to put your best foot forward. All those big conversations you and I were having about the Pac-12 and the great break-off in college sports, you want to make sure you're in that spot at the end of the day.
Yep, absolutely. It's super important time to win.
Tight end position. Oof. I'm high on tight ends this year for all the teams I look at. I just love, because you're seeing the emergence, like how these guys that go, Tyler Warren, like those guys, Brock Bowers, what they can mean to an NFL team, let alone a college team. Is Jackson Warren going to be one of those guys?
You know, I try and be, you know, pretty rational, reasonable. Hopefully people feel that. I am very high on Jackson Warren. I think he has all the potential in the world to be really, really good. And right now, he's never played a down of FBS football. He's played less than one full season ever as a tight end. Not college, ever.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was in college, JUCO. But, man, he's got all the tools. He looks so natural. And Norvell's best teams and offenses have come with really good tight end play. His last couple years in Nevada, obviously Romeo Dubs and maybe a young Torrey Horton got a lot of attention, but Cole Turner was such a huge part of those. He's in the NFL now. His most dynamic offense at CSU. Again, Torrey had a huge year in 2023, that would have been, but that has opened up a large part because of what Dallin Holker did. Didn't have, you know, dynamic receiving threats at tight end in 2022 or last year at 2024. They've got him now. Jackson, I think, has every chance to be really good. I think Rocky Beard is going to be really good. You're going to see those two on the field a ton, and I think that's just going to be massive for Braden Fowler and Nicolosi in this offense. Jackson Warren, all conference type player. I'm going to say it right now.
I'm high on this guy. I don't know why. Yeah. His other positions that he played back.
He was a quarterback. He won, quote unquote, the air raid camp, you know, under, you know, with Matt, run by Matt Mummy at Nevada.
Interesting. Yeah, I love that story. You talk about Rocky Beers too, like both of those guys. What's their strengths? Obviously, Jackson Warren does seem like that receiving.
Warren's more of a receiver. He's working on the blocking, but again, that's totally new to him. And he had shoulder surgeries, so they're probably not going to have him in line doing a whole ton of, you know, run the off tackle off Jackson Warren's back type of thing. Rocky's probably more all around. He'll probably be blocking more. I can totally see times where they line up with Rocky sort of in your traditional inline tight end and Jackson split out wide more as a receiver type. But Rocky looks like a good pass catcher in camp. I mean, he's done well there too, so I think he's going to do both. Jackson Warren, big time receiver, should get a lot of red zone targets.
I haven't been out to practice a ton, maybe just a couple of times so far. It seems like every time I'm watching, Jackson comes up with something
crazy. He seems to have really good hands, which, again, that could be a thing you wonder about for a new, you know, someone new to the pass catching position, but it just seems natural.
I love you've introduced us to this guy, just talking about him more, but Jaquez, Donut is the nickname there, but this guy is going to be, it sounds like, everything we're hearing is going to be an absolute stud.
Yeah, he should be really dynamic defensively. He'll rush the passer a lot, but also, you know, drop into some coverage, you know, be sideline a little bit, everything. Donut should have both a lot of tackles, but a good number of sacks, and they need him to force some turnovers. I mean, he needs to be dynamic, and I think he will. He'll be put in a lot of different positions. That's one of the Tyson Summers things. He finds ways to create advantages for the best players, and Donut's probably the best player on defense.
Jay Norvell was on with us earlier today, Kevin, and he's talking about how good he was as a running back in high school.
And I can see that.
He said, hey, this is a guy that could play anywhere on the field. So, natural follow-up, without giving away the playbook, could we see him return anything? Could we see him on offensive side? And Jay kind of sloughed that off, but I don't know.
Haven't seen any of that, but, I mean, he's going to be all over the field defensively. I know Tyson Summers talked about saying that Donut's maybe the smartest player he's ever worked with in his career. He was voted a captain, even though he just came on campus, you know, for spring ball. So players obviously have a high respect level for him. He's one of these old guys. He's in his, fifth or sixth year of college football because he missed last season injured. Donut should be a big, big deal.
I'm excited to see it because I know there's bad blood with Jay Norvell and Freddie Banks, and they didn't like each other as we're learning more and more. But you've every time you hear Jay talk, he's always building up that defense. Like, oh, this team. There's part of me, I do think he truly believes that, but there's also the part of me that's like, I really want to build it up to kind of stick it to Freddie.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot more alignment with him and Tyson Summers. I mean, even at practices, they spend a lot of time talking during and in between drills. It didn't work before, and that was a broken relationship with Banks and Norvell. It seems to be a really good one right now between Norvell and Summers.
38 minutes after the hour. Let's take a quick break. We'll wrap up kind of the thoughts here, maybe Kevin's final prediction for how this game's going to go down. But then we'll do what we normally do at the end. I'm not going to give my picks in the Mount West because I got to do those on Friday. Everybody knows that, Kevin. And I'm going to have you give your picks of what you think. In this last year, each and every week, we'll look at the Mountain West Conference. Two of those games are coming up. In about an hour, we got Boise State. In about 3 hours, we got Wyoming going at it. So we're getting there. So we'll get Kevin's thoughts on that. It's Rams Weekly, presented by Miranda Simpson, State Farm Insurance. We'll be right back.
There's only one sound like the key tumbling the lock open for the first time. One feeling like finally seeing your place after you've emptied all the moving boxes. That moment when four walls and a roof become the home you've always wanted. If you're on the search for that special place, we're the community bank that'll help you get there. Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender.
It's officially game week, and it's going to be game week for several weeks now, Kevin. Excited to be doing Rams Weekly with you each and every Thursday. We're going to know a lot more about Colorado State after Saturday. This is always, even for you who is so heavily invested, you're out there every day at practice, you're traveling, you're going to every single game. Even for you, it's tough to... It's tough to predict nowadays. With the transfer portal stuff, it's become very difficult.
Yeah, I think every year it gets harder to know for sure in the preseason what a team's going to be for a couple reasons. One, exactly like you say, a transfer portal. Every roster is so different. CSU has some like 40 new players, and that's normal. I mean, just everyone has that. So it's really hard to know how they'll all fit, you know, all of that type of stuff. And then you throw in, you know, just with current rules and stuff, you just have less live play, if you will, in camp. Obviously, teams don't want to hurt themselves playing against each other in camp. So it's just really hard to judge and guess because there's just a long, uncertain period with every team is new each year.
Yeah, no question. And like I said, even for you, who's really dialing in not only on the Rams, but their opponents and everything too. On the Washington side of things, you know, obviously they have a really good running back.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the quarterback. They've had some changes too. I mean, like everybody has in this league in college football. I don't know what kind of team Washington's going to be. I'm going to make my picks later, but I have a hard time thinking Washington beats a CSU team by 20 plus points, but I don't know.
Yeah, it feels like a lot, especially like you say. I mean, I'm kind of excited to see Damon Williams. Like, looks like he should be a really talented, good football player, but he's only started two games. That's really green. You have a new defense. Ryan Walters is the new defensive coordinator. He was the coach at Purdue previously. But again, that means a lot of change and turnover, which doesn't mean bad. But especially for game one, it's some uncertainty. So yeah, I think it's a lot of unknown. But I always think you not a slight edge, but it helps the underdog a little bit in week one just because everyone is a little bit, you know, getting your feet under you. And so if you're the worst team, that can help in a way if the other team isn't fully firing.
Well, I want to, as we wrap up the segment, I'm going to save this. I want to get your thoughts, your pick on CSU. Do they cover? Do they win? But we always did this last year, and this is our last year doing this. So Mountain West predictions as we roll through here, Kevin. And you have three of those games today, actually. Yeah. Starting off at 3:30 on ESPN, number 25, Boise State. They are in Florida. They're in Tampa, taking on South Florida. The Broncos are 5.5-point favorite. How do you see this one going down?
Again, really tough to know. Boise State, obviously, historically, reloads pretty well. But, I mean, they're replacing a could-have-been Heisman winner in Ashton Jeanty. A lot more pressure on Maddox Mattson, who I think did fine last year. But I don't think we know a ton about, you know, can he be a dominant player to lead a team? He did what he needed to last year, but again, he got to hand to Ashton Jeanty a lot. Now, they also had what looked like some really good running backs. I think playing in Florida in the middle of the day is tough. I don't have a ton of technical reasoning on it. I think Boise is going to win very close one.
So they don't cover the spread.
Yeah, I could see like field goal type game.
It could still be close even if they cover because it's less than a touchdown. It's less than 6 points. Yeah. So then Wyoming and Akron going at it. Talk about a team I have no idea about, and that's Akron.
Yeah.
Wyoming is also a 5.5 point favorite.
Yeah, I know Akron got gutted. They have a bowl ban. You know, CSU was maybe the beneficiary of that with Taj Bullock coming in, who will be a really exciting player for the Rams. It looks like it's perhaps going to be a rainy night, which I don't know what that means for those teams. I think Wyoming actually wins somewhat comfortably, like a two-touchdown type win.
That one I can give away because I gave that pick away today.
Yeah.
So I do think Wyoming's going to win fairly easy. Stony Brook and San Diego State, the Aztecs are 19.5-point favorites. That game's
actually mildly surprised there's a line.
Yeah, I am too. Blowout
sure,
City?
Yeah, Blowout City cover, whatever.
Friday night.
I don't even know where Stony Brook is.
UNLV's taking on our old buddy, Big Hub, Ellison Hubbard. I almost call him Sam Hubbard because of Sam Houston.
Yeah.
UNLV's taking on Sam Houston. UNLV is a 9.5-point favorite.
UNLV looked terrible last week.
They did.
They couldn't tackle anyone. Idaho State has been a bad FCS, and they barely beat UNLV, barely beat them. But again, is that a early week mirage, is that a UNLV has some problems? Where's that game at? Is that in Texas?
It is in Texas. Yeah, in Houston.
There's been a lot of whatever excitement around UNLV. I'm not as bullish on them, so I'm just going to go all in. I'm going to say, I'll just say Sam Houston wins.
Sam Houston gets the dub. How about that? 8:30 on FS1 tomorrow night, Central Michigan and San Jose State. The Spartans are a 13.5.
And there's a lot of hype on San Jose State. Central Michigan hasn't been very good. I think San Jose State wins and covers.
Then we go to Saturday. Air Force and Bucknell, there is no spread there. So
yeah, Air Force wins.
And then Nevada, Penn State. Penn State is a 43.5-point favorite.
That's really hard to cover.
Yikes.
I think that, that score is going to be whatever Penn State wants it to be. I'm going to say Nevada covers, but
right,
not in any complimentary way. They're going to lose by 40.
Yeah, New Mexico, Michigan, 34.5.
I'm going to say Michigan covers that.
That one's
poor,
a little more
poor New Mexico. I mean, that's always a tough game. And then, you know, they were fun last year, and then they lose Bronco Mendenhall. That's tough.
That is tough because
I love Devin Dampier.
I did too.
Like, we all knew he was not going to be at New Mexico, even if Bronco had stayed probably.
But
you wish. Like,
that offense
fun,
is exciting.
Fun player.
UTEP, Utah State. Utah State is a 5.5-point favorite.
I don't think Utah State's going to be very good. I'm going to say UTEP
wins.
Go
for it.
I'll just do it.
Georgia Southern, Fresno State. Fresno State's a 1.5-point dog in this game.
Fresno didn't look great last week, although not looking great at Kansas, I don't think is a bad thing. I'll say Fresno wins. I think they'll end up okay.
Hawaii and Arizona.
How about
Arizona?
That win for Hawaii last week?
Yeah, I think Hawaii's going to be a decent team this year.
I think they can get to a bowl, which I think CSU would like because then you don't have to worry about going to the Hawaii Bowl because Hawaii would be in it.
Yeah.
What's the line?
17.5, Arizona.
And that's in Arizona?
Yep.
Yeah, Arizona. Like you said, I like Timmy Chang. I like what they're doing, but yeah, Arizona covers.
All right, 2:49 the time. Let's get your Rams thoughts coming up next. Your final prediction, where you're going with that. It's Rams Weekly presented by State Farm Insurance, Miranda Simpson. You're listening to Northern Colorado's Voice, 103.1 and 1310 KFKA. Getting the band back together, Kevin. It's always exciting. We've been doing this together for a while now.
Yeah, Rams Weekly's been going what?
Is this like
4 years, maybe?
I think so, about 4 years.
2019.
And is that true?
Yeah, that's what my records show.
Really? Wow.
Have we been doing it? Well, I think I did it by myself for a minute, and then I was like, I need the big guns. We can't. I need the guy. The Kevin Lytle.
Dang, that's quite a run.
I don't think we did it in 2020.
No way, 2020, yeah. But you've had...
Kevin and I have done
four other years.
Since 2021, I believe. I want to say.
Were we doing it during the Dazio era? Maybe I shouldn't ask. I think so. Oh, God. How do we talk about that?
He did not. You guys did not.
He didn't get along with many people, to be fair.
You get along with everybody, too. Like, I think people,
Steven does, yeah.
People know that you're going to be critical at times, but you're also going to be fair, I think. But I think they respect you. From what I see, everybody else.
That was a big question mark.
they respect Kevin Lytle?
They respect you? I'm Ron Burgundy.
I mean, I see. Yeah, when you go out places, I mean, the CSU people, they like that you're there. And obviously, Jay has a good relationship.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about, my goal is to be fair and even. If things are bad, say they're bad, but not over-dramatize it. If things are good, say they're good, but not over-dramatize it. Try and get as much info as I can, and hopefully I usually am on that line pretty well.
Do you ever just want to tweet out, this guy's going to be, like I do. I go all in. You know that. Radio guys have to do things differently. People go to you for the facts. They go for me. I don't know what they go to me for, but do you ever just want to do that? Like, just go crazy. Rams ain't losing again.
Yeah, I mean, there are times where I feel, you know, pretty strongly about something. And, you know, I try and save those. And if I do come in with a very, very strong statement about something like that, that hopefully, you know, carries some weight. Because, like I say, I try and be level-headed. You know, like, this is a milder version of it, but Jackson Warren's never played down to FBS football, and I think he's going to be very, very good, potentially the best tight end in the conference.
Maybe ever.
Now, that's not like an insane take or anything, but it's pretty strong for a guy who's barely ever played the position. From what I've seen, I feel quite strongly about that.
And I just looked at him one day, and he was tall.
He is that.
And I was like, oh, that guy's going to do everything and more. And then he got hurt, and that's kind of how that went. But it's fun, Kevin. I appreciate the relationship and getting to know you over the years. You've guided me in so many areas, too, because I'll text you like, hey, how did you get that? How do we get this? You've really been helping me there, so I really appreciate that. That'll never stop, by the way. I'm always going to be lost and confused and text you.
That's fine.
It's going to happen. How are we feeling about this game?
I think it'll look different than Texas. I do think, and I've said that I think it needs to be this way, that CSU will have a different game plan and mentality and mindset than Texas last year. I think CSU will do some good things, both offensively and defensively, be exposed in some ways. I think Damon Williams will probably make a couple big plays because I think he's that type of guy. I think CSU will be moderately competitive. I could see one of those where, you know, by halftime it's Washington's leading, but it's still kind of in doubt, and then Washington somewhat pulls away in the second half. That's kind of my feel. CSU will be moderately competitive, but also not in it with a chance to win in the final 3 minutes or whatever.
Cover?
Yeah, so I have my game-by-game predictions coming this evening, and for week one at least, I won't change that. And I have Washington 34-16, so that'd be a slight cover for CSU.
34-16, and are we feeling optimistic about CSU?
Again, somewhat it depends on how that goes. If it's, you know, Washington's up 34-0 after the first quarter and CSU scores a couple garbage time scores, no, people would feel bad. But if it's what I kind of laid out of, you know, hey, at halftime it's 24-13 and CSU's done some good stuff, and then Washington, you know, kind of holds them off in the second half, I think people would feel okay.
Well, it's going to be a test, and it's a good measuring stick, I suppose, to see where CSU stacks up. Like we said, with a lot of these games, I mean, every game is a test, and for future Pac-12 teams, these are all tests coming up. So we'll see, Kevin. Great work from you as always. Safe journeys tomorrow as you get set to take off to Seattle.
Excited to head back on the road.
Getting back on the road, and we'll be back next week as we got that'll be UNC week game two. So looking forward to it. Kevin, appreciate you as always, my friend. Rams Weekly presented by Marinda Simpson State Farm Insurance. That'll do it for us. We'll be back at it next week.
This KFKA podcast is presented by Bank of Colorado. There's only one Colorado and one community like Greeley, the place we've called home for years. Family-owned, community-focused banking, Bank of Colorado. There's only one. Member FDIC.